All attendees are in listen-only mode.
All right, that's good to know, too. Good morning. All right. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to today's meeting of the Board of Public Works. Love to go ahead and get started with the business of the day. So first, Secretary Guntram, good morning. And it's good to see you. And please proceed.
Good to see you, Governor. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning,
Mr. Treasurer, Madam Comptroller. There are 13 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning, and one report of emergency permit. I'm withdrawing item 12 at the request of St. Mary's College of Maryland. We do have one request to speak. It's from Delegate Bob Long on item 8. That's the Department of Housing and Community Development loan for the Merit Station Team project in Dundalk. I'm not seeing Delegate Long in attendance yet, so the board
probably want to
that item or other items, perhaps.
I think he'll do down virtually.
Thank you. I'm not seeing Delegate Long yet on the virtual attendance list, so I'm going to let you know when you're on.
Okay. Wonderful. All right.
Mr. Governor, may I just make a quick comment? I just wanted to comment and sort of commend DHCD and the developers of these projects. Several of them that are listed here all discuss the sustainability of the projects with high efficiency HVAC units, Energy Star, and that they all meet National Green Building Standard guidelines. So it's great to see that when we're doing this work with Rental Housing Works programs, we're doing them for the long term in a sustainable way. Thanks.
You're here. You're here. So with that, I'd like to call up items 6 through 8, which are requests from the Department of Housing and Community Development to award more than $10.4 million in loans through the Rental Housing Works program and $3 million from the Partnership of Rental Housing Program to support 3 projects in Dundalk and Hanover and also in Edgewood. Both the Rental Housing Works Program and also the Partnership Rental Housing Program are absolutely critical. They've been critical. They've been effective state initiatives that really do provide funding for projects that create preserve affordable housing rental units in communities all across the state. And joining us to speak about this today is our fabulous Secretary of Housing and Community Development, Secretary Day, who has been just an incredible and innovative leader in this space well before becoming the Secretary. And we are glad that that we now have his leadership on the statewide level to continue to push this work forward. So, Secretary Day, great to see you, and please proceed.
More pleasure to be here with you, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer. Pleasure to be with you this morning. Thank you, as always, Governor, for your confidence. And very nice to see the three of you in these roles. I'm joined virtually today by Mr. Ed Barnett, Director of Rental Lending, as a part of the Community Development Administration of the Department of Housing and Community Development virtually. So you may have more information if you've got detailed questions, but I'll do my best. This morning, I have 3 items to present for your consideration. Each is an award of loan funds to close a gap, enabling the financing and development of affordable housing units for their communities. The first of these items is item agenda six. This is the Eagle Park Senior Vistas. This is part 2 of a 2-part development project in Hanover, Maryland. As you can see, there are 2 pieces to this project that the state is involved in, that we propose to be involved in. First is an award of $3.5 million in the Rental Housing Works Program. The second is a partnership rental housing program loan of $3 million. The 2 of these vehicles simultaneously are used in many projects to enable closing that gap that exists in many of these projects. As the Comptroller pointed out, there are assurances that this project will be sustainably developed. Would you like me to go through each of the 3 before taking any questions?
Absolutely.
Okay. The second of these projects is Marion Village Senior Apartments in Edgewood, Maryland, Harford County. This is a $3.4 million Rental Housing Works Program loan. $3.5 million is the current cap that we have set. So the $3.5 million you see in the first is at the maximum. The $3.4 million, you're obviously very close to it. This is a total $24 million, total budget $24 million project. As you can see, the previous was $25 million project. And the third of these is in Dundalk. This is the Merritt Station Part 2 development. This has been an ongoing project that the state has been involved with. And the loan amount for this one, also around Housing Works Program, loan is $3.5 million. Happy to take any questions that you have.
Thank you so much, Mr. Secretary. Do we have any questions for the Secretary?
Questions. Important program. Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
No, sir.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And great work.
Thank you.
Great work. Appreciate it. I believe we do not have a Delegate Long on the line. That's correct. Okay. So if that's the case, we can we'll move on. That works for you, Secretary. And as we move on, before we go on to any further items for discussion, I just want to acknowledge somebody, and that's Mr. Daquan Wallace, and also his mom. Who is one of the people that we'll be hearing about in a second for settlement. But just want to say it's great to have you here, and great to have you both here, and thank you so much for being here with us. May I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So,
if I can, I wanted to ask a question on item 13.
Item 13 is the settlement request from the Department of Public Safety and Professional Services relating to Madam Mr. Wallace. We have Assistant Attorney General Mullally available. Next, we also have Secretary Sprouts available.
Right. Who should I direct any questions to?
It depends, Mr. Trevor. So if there's questions about the underlying legal matter, the facts of the case, or the specific matter, I believe Assistant Attorney General Mullally is going to be best.
Tell you what, I'm going to just start talking, and then folks can jump in as if it's their item or under their jurisdiction. So here we are again. $7 million. $7 million. You remember a couple of weeks ago when I was here and I said we were on pace for $750,000? I was wrong. We're on pace now for about $42 million. Granted, this isn't going to happen, but this is not a new issue. This is a long-standing problem in which no one is really being held accountable. Let me ask my first question. We've read the facts of the case, and I guess I'll start with the Attorney General's office. In the analysis of the plaintiff's claim, this says we do not believe that the defendants were transferred at the behest of gang or any other improper purpose, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then when I read the rest of the case, it said that things weren't properly documented, that et cetera, et cetera. It seems to totally contradict what the analysis said. And it also says that they do not believe that anything was done inappropriately or intentionally, that these officers did anything. But if my information is correct, at the time that this occurred, 21 were already under federal indictment for corruption. So am I wrong to assume if you're under federal indictment for corruption that I'm supposed to believe anything else you say? But the question on this is, why do we believe that this didn't happen the way it's being reported, that everyone acted properly in this case? And also, it goes on to say, but we do not believe a jury would believe that. Why would a jury find something different than what we believe, that the state believes?
Good morning, Governor Moore, Treasurer Davis, and Comptroller Learman. I'm Laura Mullally. If the question is directed to me, because I authored the letter to the Board of Public Works, I'm happy to answer your question. One of the matters is that in the state jury trial, in which I represented the state of Maryland, the jury concluded that state officers, and in this case, it would have been the same officers that are charged in the federal case, Jenkins Renee, Tamara Patterson, and Lisa Portee. The jury concluded that they did not act in concert to assault or batter Daquan Wallace. That's one piece. We have a jury of 12 people that concluded that, although they also concluded that the state was negligent in its training and supervision of officers, and that state employees engaged in unconstitutional customs and policies and were deliberately indifferent under the state constitution to Mr. Wallace. Did you want to ask a question, Treasurer David? Oh,
yes, that those things sounded contradictory right there. On the one hand, they're saying that, and I mean, I'm not even really talking to jury. I guess I'm talking the state's position. But on the one hand, we're saying that all sorts of things weren't followed and so forth, but there was no coordinated effort. Or how can both of those things be true? Either something happened or it didn't.
Well, we know that other inmates attacked and injured Mr. Wallace. There are two different reasons why that could have happened. But I think what, Mr. Treasurer, what you're doing is you're asking a question about negligence versus deliberate indifference versus intentional or grossly negligent conduct. And certainly there was plenty of negligence in this case. The jury found that there was nothing in the record that I can dispute in terms of negligence. In terms of gross negligence, what my concern was, and remember, of course, that the federal case has not been tried. We had a trial date of January 9th because the parties reached a settlement in principle. It was taken off the court's docket, but if the settlement is not approved, the matter will go back on the court's docket. So there are federal claims that have not been resolved. But it is harder to prove deliberate indifference, gross negligence, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. And I think it comes down to, and it boils down to, the intent of the officer. You can be negligent and not necessarily intend harm to another person. Having worked with the officers, having sat with them during their depositions, and having sat with them through a trial, and I don't believe that there is evidence that they were, well, we know that they were not linked to the corruption in the jail in 2013. None of these officers were indicted, nor were they drawn into those criminal cases. And it, to me, it's just a question of what inferences will a jury draw about the federal case. And you can start with Mr. Wallace, who's severely injured, and work back to whether or not the actions were grossly negligent, deliberately indifferent, or intentional infliction of emotional distress. Have I answered your question, sir?
Yes, and let me make clear, this isn't about, my questions really aren't about whether or not this award should be made. That, yes, I'm yes with that, so I wanted to be clear. But how do we, and I know it's not even for you, although I do have an additional question that maybe you or someone else can answer, but we keep ending up here. And so, see, and when I think of corrections, again, for years when I was in the General Assembly, I heard complaints from that department and its representatives that we need more money. We need raises. We need. Here's your raise right here. Here's your additional personnel right here. We keep spending taxpayer money, money that could be going for more productive uses. And this isn't even, normally these things come out the budget. Apparently this is coming out the general fund. So we're taking needed resources, and my office is going to have some relevant information coming out next week where we will show that we need this money. But instead, we're paying it out for improper, unacceptable behavior. And it's okay. I'm curious, were any of the officers disciplined for this gross negligence and negligence or whatever we want? Was there any type of discipline, or did they just get close to jail, transfer them to another unit, and it was business as usual?
All of the officers involved have since retired.
No, at the time that it occurred in 2014.
And we were doing the case in 2014, there was no evidence of any disciplinary action. However, we are clear that there was some improprieties of standard operating procedure that may have precipitated to the law with Mr. Wild. I do want you to know that in this administration and going through, we are holding people accountable. We have expanded our intel and investigation division to do more federal investigation. We are actively disciplining people at all levels, from counseling to suspension to termination, based on inappropriate actions. And we will not stand for inappropriate actions within our department. We want our department to be known as the Department of Professionals. And we want to remove the stigma that has been put on our correctional officers, because one or two does not represent our entire 6,000 some officers that we have that do a good job on a daily basis. So know that going forward, while I inherited to this and I take responsibility because it is mine now, going forward with this administration, it is my goal that you cannot see it.
Thank you. And I want to be clear, I'm not blaming this administration. This actually occurred before Governor Hogan's administration. So we got to get beyond, well, it's the secretary's fault, it's the governor's fault. No, these are individuals who know better, and they have to be held accountable. We're not going to rate the secretaries over. They didn't do anything. These folks know better. They're the ones that are, and I know the job is difficult, but they accepted that responsibility, and you have to have a certain level of accountability as a worker. And you can't hide behind the bosses or the union or whatever the case may be. This is on them, and they have to be treated as such. And if they are aligning with certain criminal forces, then they need to join those forces as guests of the state, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm going to let it go with this. My real reason for pointing this out is because this isn't going to keep happening. I'm going to keep bringing this up at every meeting, every time it happens. I figured the more I talk, the more they write. The more they write, the more people learn. And at some point, people are going to get fed up with this, and then the blame is going to go where it's supposed to go, on those individuals. And I think if the spotlight starts getting on them and their actions, and they're held accountable, then maybe we have a chance to stop wasting needed taxpayer dollars. So that's where I'm coming from. And every time something like this happens, I'm going to point it out. So again, so we can bring attention and a spotlight to it and try to clean this mess up, because it's not acceptable.
We understand that moving forward, the department has seen with integrity at all levels of the department. And some of the things that have been put in place since this occurred was expansive background checks now for correctional officers, so that we can ensure the type of individual that we're getting to work inside of those facilities, and continual training. Confrontation avoidance training is being done as part of in-service as well as part of the academy. Implicit bias training is being done in those areas. So we are trying to ensure that we move that correction to professionals. And that's what we want to be professional, understanding that these are human beings just like their loved ones that they're dealing with every day. And I expect them, they know the expectation of me is that I expect them to handle them as such.
I'm sure you're doing a great job. Believe me, my comments were not directed at you in any way, shape, or form. So I wanted to be clear about that. You just happened to be at that podium. But in no matter was I referring to you or your team or this administration. To be, as I said, I was talking about those individuals. They know better.
I can tell you, Ms. Treasurer, your frustration is shared. And your frustration, I know, is also shared by the secretary. And I'm thankful because these type of issues and being able to address these things were of the highest priority in the process of, you know, first speaking with Secretary Scruggs about this. So we're thankful for the fact that, you know, in this time and in this moment, these type of issues can and they will be addressed. So your frustration is shared.
Thank you.
Thank you. I've been made aware that that Delegate Long from the 6th District is actually on the line right now.
Oh, he's actually in person,
even better, in 3D. Delegate, good to see you. And I know you like to speak in support of item 8.
Yes, sir.
So please join us.
I'm trying to figure out.
It's a bit of a maze to get in there.
Perfect. Things a little different than the last time I was here.
Morning, Delegate.
Good morning. How are you?
Outstanding.
Wonderful day. I want to thank Governor Moore, Comptroller Merriman, and Treasurer Davis giving me this opportunity to speak on the mayor property to what we present the best way to be better. New housing project is proposed. It's Merritt Station 2 LLC. This project's going to my district. We have a problem with overcrowding as right now in schools and roads, and I mean, there's several different issues that we have. And I understand that this is for senior citizens. My credit 55 is going to be restricted. Am I correct?
Yeah. It's an age restricted.
That's why I'm here today, because I want to make sure that, you know, we don't put any more strain on our infrastructure. And, you know, I think, you know, our seniors definitely need help. So I'm going to be short and sweet. I just want to share my constituents' concerns and make sure that, you know, speak up about
it. Thank you so much, and thank you for being here in person to be able to share your thoughts. Thank you, Delegate. Any questions?
I'll just say, Delegate, it's nice to see you. We shared an adjoining boundary in our districts for 8 years, and certainly well aware of the need for schools and infrastructure, and also the desperate need for more affordable housing in your district, in my district, for senior housing in every region of the state. So I'm very excited to see these projects move forward, and excited to see more affordable housing projects coming to the Board of Public Works under Secretary Day in the future as well, because people need a place to live. So thank you.
If this is going to be an age-restricting project, will that be a covenant in the deed? So in other words, they can't change in the middle of the road, but if we're one of the few, run it out of whatever, because that creates a real problem for my district. Again, as you all know, our schools are overcrowded. We want to make sure it is for age-restricted only. And just make sure my constituents are protected.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Shelby. Thank you.
Yeah, get out of here.
May I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. So let's move on to DNR Real Property Agenda. Secretary Kurtz, good morning. Good to see you. I saw you late last night, not early this morning, so I don't know when you were sleeping. But you're indefatigable, and you've already seen in the work that you're pulling together. So thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It was a pleasure to be the comptroller and the treasurer last night as well, given the tutelage on the BPW process. Thank you very much for having me, Mr. Governor, comptroller, Mr. Treasurer. For the record, my name is Josh Kurtz, Department of Natural Resources Secretary. The Department of Natural Resources is presenting 5 items today for your consideration. We have agency representatives here to answer any questions.
Please proceed.
All right, so we've got a set of playground work as well, all across the state, as well as a few stateside projects protecting property. We're in Anne Arundel County, Frederick County, as you see in 1 and 2. 3 is in Harford County, 4 is in Charles, 5 is in Frederick. That's a really exciting one. We're actually matching some federal property with our stateside, so a lot of bang for the buck.
And the landowner will be donating almost 8 acres of property himself, too, I see.
Yes.
That's great. Exciting.
Okay. Are there any questions, Mr. Secretary? These are great projects, Mr. Secretary. Thank you. May I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Outstanding. Mr. Secretary, great work. Thank you so much. Next up, University System of Maryland agenda. Good morning, Mr. Hickey. Good to see you.
Governor, morning, Mr. Treasurer, Madam Comptroller, Tom Hickey, representing the University System of Maryland. There are four items for your consideration this morning. We're happy to answer any questions.
Please proceed. Oh, any additional questions, Mr. Hickey?
Just on the Frostburg State, I understand, I guess it's not a question, but more just a really excited about the public art and hopeful that in the future we can find public art from Maryland. Yes, I know you do. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Hickey.
Only one question on the compensate piece. Is there a timeline they've laid out for that for completion?
I don't believe I have that information with me today. He's typically for these films, since we don't have folks on the line. I did for the Frostburg, I think, because I thought there might be questions on the part project.
Great.
But you have to follow up.
Great. Okay. We'll follow up. Thank you. May I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Outstanding. Thank you so much. Next up, the Maryland Department of Transportation, Deputy Secretary Powell. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Good morning,
Governor. I'm Sean Powell, Deputy Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation. We have 15 items today that we're presenting. We also have a supplemental item, 15 GM mod. We also have three contracts on the floor awarded to small and minority disadvantaged business enterprises for about $1.5 million. We would like to highlight one of our items has a 21% coverage in small business enterprises. So it'll be an excitement. So I think we will have 1%. With that, we do have representatives available. Any questions you may have? Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And I'd like to briefly call up item 15, which is a request from Maryland Aviation Administration to enter into a month-to-month lease agreement. And that's with Fraport Maryland to continue the management of the airport retail concessions program at BWI Marshall. As I mentioned last week, the MAA in the next coming weeks and months will be developing and releasing a new RFP. And really establishing a process that's going to encourage robust competition, fairness, and provisions that align with our administration's values, as well as our short-term and our long-term economic strategies. I know, and Roxy, it's good to see you. It's good to see you in the folks tonight here. I know that Treasurer Davis and also Comptroller Lehrman and I that we are in agreement that concerning the requirement for a labor peace agreement. And then also, I can commit today that such a requirement will be a part of this new solicitation. When you think about the work of the airport, you think about the work of BWI Marshall. It is an absolutely critical economic engine for our state and also for our region. And the retail and the concessions program of the airport, it's going to be a very key element to the growth and the success of the airport. And the growth and the success of the airport, and we thank you, Ricky. It's great to see you. That the growth and success of the airport is a critical part to Maryland's growth, and so being able to do that in conjunction, being able to do that coordinated, is going to be an important part for how this administration is going to think it's going to move. It's the busiest commercial airport in the D.C. metropolitan region, and we need to make sure that we are being thoughtful. We need to make sure that we're being deliberate. We need to make sure we're being transparent about the RFP and this entire solicitation process. And so I want to thank my colleagues on this board for their partnership and also for their patience as we conduct the new solicitation for this project. With that said, are there any other comments on this amendment, John?
Since I've gotten on a roll here, one thing I'm curious about and is the month-to-month. How long do we think it will be before we get the next procurement out on the street, if you will?
Well, I'm sure we have an exact time. I want to make sure that we nail it properly.
Ballpark.
Ballpark.
We don't have a ballpark. Can I get back to you?
No, that's fine. The reason why I bring it up because I was just curious. There are 26 businesses that at the end of this month, their lease is up.
Yeah.
And if I were them, and it's a month-to-month thing with Fraport, if I find another place where I can get more than a month-to-month lease, as we all say in business, or as I always hear, they want certainty. And at month-to-month, there is no certainty. You can certainly get 60 days notice and be told we no longer want your business. So when you sort of have that hanging over your head that at any point in time you can get that notice, if I can go to Reagan National or Dulles or someplace else, I'm probably going to do that because I can get certainty there. So I guess my point is, if it's a couple of months, then it makes sense. But if this thing going to get anywhere close to a year, then why not do 6-month leases or something that provides a little more certainty about, you know, for the business group? And that's all I really had to say.
I understood, sir. You know, there's a discussion that we've been having. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
I'm Madam President. I'm Ricky, U.S. Executive Director. So, to your question, sir, there are three subleases right now that expire over the next month or so. We certainly plan to have this issue resolved for the other subleases. Contract expiration, we worked very closely with our subtenants. We went through a pandemic with them. We made extensions to get a lot of contract modifications support. But I think they're pretty confident in the administration's support for them, and I don't see them vacating because they want to.
Okay. I mean, I will say, Ms. Treasurer, I think it's a fair flag, and I think it's something that that this team also has been all over as well. Because you are right. While, you know, we want to make sure that we are doing this process and redoing this process accordingly and fairly, we are making sure that we're also staying on top of the unintended consequences of increased vacancies and what that could also mean in terms of measures of uncertainty. So it's an important flag.
Well, they're the experts. If they're comfortable with that, then I'm fine.
And Mr. Governor, I just also want to applaud the actions that you're taking. You know, it's not ideal, of course, but certainly recognize that this extension is a critical step to ensuring that the services continue to benefit the thousands of passengers that travel through BWI Marshall, the busiest airport in the region and also the best. But also will express sort of, you know, for the past 8 years have been dealing with sort of frustration with Fraport's refusal to work with workers who want to be union and have labor peace at the airport. So really thrilled that we're all partnering together to make sure that the new procurement solicitation include a provision on labor peace to ensure that all the hardworking men and women have a right to organize for better wages and working conditions. So thank you, Governor.
Thank you both. Thank you both very much. Thank you both very much. May I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
Outstanding. Thank you, Deputy Secretary. Thank you. And let's conclude with the Department of General Services agenda. Secretary Chaudhry, good morning. It is great to see you this morning. Again, after another late night last evening. So great to see you. Thanks for your leadership and hard work.
Thank you, Mr. Governor. It's great to see everyone last night and the evening. Great turnout. Very, very excited to be part of that. That was great. Good morning, Mr. Governor, Madam Comptroller, Treasurer for the record, I'm Chief Chaudhry, Secretary of the Department of General Services. Today, the Department is presenting 35 items on our agenda. We are withdrawing item 30IT, section 3.1, and providing revisions to items CGL3 as well as CGL92. Our agenda features over $20 million from capital grants and loans, including $10 million for renovations for the Sinai Hospital Emergency Department. And $3 million for the historic Annapolis to renovate the historic Rice House here in our beautiful downtown. I also want to recognize that yesterday we wrapped up Black History Month. And our agenda today has three capital grant items that supports African-American history and culture in the state. That includes $2 million for the National Great Black and Wax Museum in Baltimore City,
$200,000 for the African American Heritage Center in Frederick County, as well as $300,000 for the International Black Firefighters Museum in Baltimore City. We have agency representatives here to answer any questions you may have, and happy to run in detail as needed.
First, let me say on those final items, as a person who is not just a visitor but a fan of all of those, this is a great investment, great development. So thank you so much, for Secretary. And it's also my understanding that we have one speaker signed up in support of item 18 CGL, which is the $500,000 capital grant for Riverdale Park, the Purple Line project. Kim Azar from the Prince George's County Department of Public Works and Transportation is joining us today as well. Ms. Mazar, it's great to see you. Great to see you. Good morning.
Thank you, Governor, Comptroller, and Treasurer. And I'm just here on behalf of the Prince George's County to say thank you so much for considering us for this capital grant improvement to make a difference in the Purple Line area of Riverdale Park, and add some additional sidewalks to give those communities the access to the Purple Line. So we're very thankful
It's an important project, and we're talking about something that has potential of not just having immediate but generational impact on the state. So it's an exciting project. Is there any further discussion on the DGS agenda?
Yes, Mr. Governor. On is Administrator Lamone or somebody from the Maryland State Board of Elections here?
Yes, so thank you so much, sir. Thank you.
Hi, it's Linda Lamone, Administrator of Elections.
Hi, Madam Administrator. Great to hear you. This is Brooke. You probably know that. So my understanding is that during the renewal period for our current election system, and this is item 29 on the DGS agenda, that the State Board of Elections intends to draft an RFP to re-procure these services. Is that correct?
We're going to be issuing an RFP for a new voting system, yes.
Yes, great. Terrific. And you and I have discussed this before. This is nothing new. You know of my support and interest in ranked choice voting and frustration that our current system is unable to handle ranked choice voting. And I just, you know, wanted to reconfirm with you that we have your commitment that RFP will ensure that any future voting systems and election administration systems that we are brought to us will have the ability to handle ranked choice voting in the future.
Yes, you have my commitment, Madam Controller. Right.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Administrator Lamone, for being here today and answering that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for that. May I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Thank you all very much. We'll see you at the next meeting of Board of Public Works on Wednesday, March 15th in the Treasury Building. We are adjourned. Thank you.